come back and see, I welcome. I wonder how that you found out. You wonder how that you found out about Columbia House Party.
There it is.
There it is. Hey, Jake.
Hey, man.
What's going on?
Oh, you know. Just chilling.
Yeah.
Ready to answer some questions from a bag.
That's right.
Of mail.
This is your January mailbag episode. We're just going to answer your questions.
Yeah.
It's a mailbag. It's pretty straightforward. You guys have heard them before. You guys have heard one from us before. You guys are the ones submitting the questions. So there's not a lot to explain here.
All right.
We are going to get started on the mailbag. Songs by Merchant Ships.
I don't know that song.
I like that song a lot. That's a little
it sounds cool.
A little screamier than I normally go. It's a good one, and the first verse includes the phrase 20 questions, so
you're good at finding this, eh?
The intro lyric is going to be the most interesting, because you know I have to kind of know what my mailbag answers are going to be ahead of time, or what your mailbag answers are going to be ahead of time.
Planning
to find that one. Planning, yeah. And also like locking in your answers and not feeling like changing them on a whim. Like I'm definitely going to do for one of the questions.
I'm definitely doing that for a couple, I think. All right.
Definitely. Yeah. Let's start with a lighter one.
All right.
Get some jump shots up, a little shoot around action here. This one comes from Chris P. When will the fourth wave of ska begin?
Daddy, it's already here.
I was going to say Pup's next album.
Pup's next album. You got Ska Tune Network. You have We Are the Union. We have Kill Lincoln. Fourth wave of ska is here. Here's the thing. Music is cyclical. All genres come back around when there's enough nostalgia for them. If you think the heyday of ska is not coming back, you're wrong. Because I'm telling you, there's a huge, just as there is a large upswell, groundswell of young people sort of reinventing and bringing new sounds to emo and pop punk, it's happening in ska too.
Ska defines who I am as a person, and I will never turn my back on ska.
Hey man, I'm going on 15 years of it now, so I'm not going to stop.
All right, Chris P, be ready, man. Could be here any day now. Just keep your ears out. I mean, look, even some of the, not to get into the genre discussion again, I don't know where like a band like Swordfish falls. They're certainly not ska, but that's an awful lot of horn usage.
Or
we're
like,
pushing up against it.
Or like, you know, Devin K and the Solutions have two horn players.
Devin K and Solutions is pretty close to ska.
Pretty close. They got two regular horn players in the band. Rosenstock always is bordering bordering on ska.
Yeah. Rosenstock is probably the only punk musician who would like embrace being ska.
He does.
Like, I'm not punk, I'm ska.
He put a ska on song on Worry.
Toot, toot, toot. I'm a jazz boy. As he Instagram captioned of him playing the saxophone. Oh, boy. Love that guy.
Yeah, he's the best.
All right. Let's get into a meteor question. Mm. This question comes from Doug. He asks, we're in a huge reunion era right now. Can you think of any bands that put out a good album after a breakup or hiatus?
I don't mean to stay so on brand, but I will. Both of my answers are not as good as their pre-breakup hiatus output. I want to make that clear.
Okay.
The LCD Sound System record.
Okay. I thought you were going to say something else and I was going to have to argue.
Is way better than I thought it was going to be. I definitely thought after all the noise and everything, it would just be like a James Murphy ego record and it would be exhausting. But American Dream is very good. I know a lot of people didn't love this one, but I think it's aging better. And it has a bit of a better perspective right now. The Dismemberment Plan This is one you're gonna find.
Uncanny Valley. Yeah, it is in my notes. Sorry, Jake. That one's not like I anticipated you were gonna say this, and my notes just say dismemberment plan. Racket. Uncanny Valley. Sorry, Jake.
Here's the thing. I saw them on the tour. I went to New York to see them on the tour for this album. This is one of those albums that I don't mean to sound like nerdy, whatever music guy. This is one of those albums I put up there with like an album like The Hold Steady's Teeth Dreams, where the problem with this album for me is in the production. For some reason, they buried the drums in the mix entirely. And one of the most identifiable and best things about the Dismemberment Plan is their drums. It's not a perfect record by any means. There's definitely a couple of clunkers on there. The songs that are good, hearing them live with loud ass drums made them 10 times better.
That makes sense.
So I do think it's a record that, as we just said, Blowout just remastered it. I would kill for a remaster of Uncanny Valley.
Shocked that you didn't say Neighborhoods by Blink-182.
I don't really consider that one.
Wasn't it like 5 years later?
Seven.
Seven, yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's true. You're right. No, you're right. I should have said Neighborhoods. Yeah. Neighborhoods is the best one. Yeah. Neighborhoods might be the second best Blink record.
This is a really hard thing to just like make sure you didn't miss things. So I'm sure there's somewhere missing. A couple I thought of off the top of my head, and it was the intro lyric, My Bloody Valentine's, MBV, after they were off for a pretty long time.
See, I didn't like that one at all. Oh. I found it really disappointing.
Oh. Well,
now we're one.
I make the intro.
Now
we're one I make the one. Intro lyric, Jake. So guess what?
Flip the table.
Dinosaur Jr., when they came back, was pretty good. I liked Blondie's Return, No Exit.
Yeah, I like that one a lot, too.
Yeah.
Dinosaur Jr. is a great pick, actually.
Yeah, that album was called Beyond, if you gave up on Dinosaur Jr. or checked out.
Well, actually, one of my favorite album openers, that's that album, Almost Ready, is a great song.
Maybe I should have used that as the opening lyric.
Maybe you should have.
Well, we all make mistakes. We all make mistakes, like getting tickets to see Poppy on Super Bowl Sunday. All right, question four. Comes from Joanna and is again relevant to music we're excited about in 2020, at least for me. Joanna asks, are there any albums you find you can't enjoy the same way you once did now that you're older? And are there albums that you now have a greater appreciation for than you did when you were younger? The second part of this question first, the albums we now have a greater appreciation for than we did when we were younger is kind of this whole podcast.
Yeah, pretty much all of them.
Yeah, and there have been like obviously the
Neighborhoods
album,
by Blink-182.
Obviously the albums we're picking are albums that one of us usually feels really strongly about.
Yeah.
But when in the episodes where they've been your albums, quote unquote, or a guest leans us toward one album, it's been great to go revisit those and get a, you know, I think when I was younger, especially like teenage years or early university, I didn't put a lot of thought into why I liked certain albums. I just liked them. And like, I was always a lyrics person. So that helped to some degree. But, you know, going back and diving into why a band made the choices they did or why they're singing about the things they're singing, this whole podcast experiment has been an exercise in appreciating those albums more. Do you have any specific answers to that one?
I don't want to go too vague because I agree with you. But like, I've said this before on the show, kind of pick any like emo album from 2005, 2010, because now I'm actually like throwing myself into the fact that I love them. Like Black Parade is a perfect example.
Yeah.
I
was arguing with someone about that on Instagram today.
I wonder who it was.
Arguing is the wrong word. I never actually argue. I was just like, hey, don't say that. That's not nice.
It's okay. I agree with Heather about a lot of albums.
I've
argued with her about Robin before too.
Robin, Body Talk is actually a good answer.
For Body Talk is a great answer.
Of albums that we now have a greater appreciation for.
But like Black Parade for me, I think is my answer because like now
does she not like Robin?
No, she thinks that Call Your Girlfriend's better than Dancing on My Own.
Oh. Yeah, but we talked about that in the episode. That's like...
I see the argument.
I disagree, but it's close enough.
The argument's there. It's just wrong.
Also, it still kills me that I mentioned the wrong song as the Taron Killam cover. It's still bothering me.
Of course that's still bothering. It's been fucking like 20 episodes.
All right.
But Black Parade is now like genuinely one of my favorite albums. And at the time, I was just like, I can't listen to this. And now it's like, no, I'm going to go home and listen to it today. I think both these answers have very vague answers that can get more specific. Like,
the first part of her question, I have some very specific answers.
I do too, but I think it's based on a bigger idea.
Yes.
Like, I think shitty.
Yeah. So to refresh, the first part of Joanna's question is, are there any albums you find you can't enjoy the same way you once did? And she phrased it as now that you're older, which I think was trying to get at this, you know, this Robin style thing or My Chemical Romance style thing that because of age, we have a different appreciation of it. For me,
answer to both is emo between 2005 and 2010.
Now, for me, it's a lot like Pine Grove just had an album come out.
Yeah.
And I loved Pine Grove like around the time Cardinal came out. And I'm not going to support them. There are enough, even with the vagueness of that whole situation and how kind of they're on the PR tour now yeah. of like, oh, we did the right things and we took the right step. It's just, it's weird to go back to.
Kanye's the most glaring one.
Yeah. I mean, like My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy was on my all decade top 100, but people were like, it's low. And I'm like, it's lucky it's on there. Cause I can't go back and listen to it without like, yeah. being like, oh, I hate.
Actually,
hates the wrong word.
Kanye is an interesting one for this or these two specific questions, because genuinely one of the album, a couple of albums actually of his, I could say for the, I didn't appreciate when I was younger than I do now.
Cause they're remarkable albums.
But also I have no interest in listening or supporting him in any way whatsoever anymore. So, I mean, like, yeah, pick your brand new, pick
it's one. Mystery band, whatever. Yeah,
it's Morrissey, pick one.
Lost Prophets. we just won't get into that one.
Oh, it's the second time someone's made a Lost Prophets joke to me about this exactly. Actually, it might have been you both times. But yeah, I think in terms of albums from when I was younger that I appreciate less now that are in the non Badman division.
Badman.
The Boxcar Racer album.
Yeah, that's a...
I think.
It's not a bad pick.
Honestly, as much as I like to tout it, a lot of ska.
Yeah, for me, probably the biggest one is like just the general genre of screamo, where like I listen to a lot of the screamier stuff. And while I did lead the episode with a Merchant Ships clip, that is not where I am a lot of the time. And then obviously there's also the element, and this isn't exactly the Badman thing, but like you go back and listen to some of the hip hop that I listen to or
Blink.
Yeah, it's just some of it's a little harder to agree with. And if the nostalgia weren't there or the connection to it weren't there, it would maybe be
a little
different. Also, I really liked Disturbed. I don't know about that. I still like Slipknot, but Disturbed, I feel like there's a line between those two.
I had a big Korn phase. I get it.
You had the life.
I did.
Good question. Probably something we could do a larger discussion around
from the
Badman side. We move on. This next question comes from Doug CL, and I have no idea if that's the same as Doug without the CL in his name, or we just copied the questions over wrong. If it is the same person, Doug, show yourself and consider yourself lucky. You got two in the top five. Unbelievable. Doug CL asks, I know it's a little early for mailbag cues. It's never too early for mailbag cues. He asks, I did karaoke this weekend, and I want to know what your go-to karaoke songs are.
So I have like 30.
let's just, I think we're at the point where we could just play one that people are probably going to see coming from you.
Yep, if you've ever been to karaoke.
If you've ever met Jake, you know that this is his go-to karaoke trip. Is Flagpole Sitta by Harvey Danger off of Where Have All the Merrymakers Gone? I've shared before in one of my year-end lists, the way that I basically found and got attached to Blink initially was I had to go to therapy when I was younger, and part of my reward for going to it was that on the drive home, the top 7 at 7 on 95.9 in London would be on, and Damn It by Blink-182 was on the charts at that point. So it was like for a couple weeks in a row, I was like, oh, I get to hear Damn It by Blink-182. And I didn't have that album or whatever. Around the same time, or at least in the same time in my head, was that song. So I appreciate, I'm not going to say I appreciate your rendition of it necessarily, but I appreciate your love for Flagpole Sitta by Harvey Danger.
I mean, that one sort of, other than the fact that I fucking love Harvey Danger, that one came out of necessity. In my days of going to Sneaky D's karaoke all the time.
Ah.
It's that some of the stuff I want to do is not in their book because I don't think they've updated their karaoke book in 15 years.
Why would you? You're Sneaky D's. You host an emo night.
Absolutely. And so I was like, oh,
If someone sang a new-ish song at Sneaky D's karaoke, I would have been mad in the times that I was going to Sneaky D's karaoke. True.
But yeah, I used to do karaoke a ton. I haven't really done it in a while. So I have a bunch of karaoke songs.
Hit us.
Me and Jacob Kramer do a pretty good rendition of Fat Lip by Sum 41. He does the Steve-O, I do the Derek parts. We talk about it too much to our friends and families. Common People by Pulp is one I like a lot. These Eyes by the Guess Who, my friend Adrian and I used to do a lot. Modern Love by David Bowie. I could go on. I won't.
So my issue is I'm not a very good singer at all. I've made the mistake before of trying a Fall Out Boy or Panic at the Disco, and you forget at some point that those guys have chops and depth and range. And if you are not a good singer and you're trying to pick a song that you could just kind of yell along to and people will help you out by singing along, the second part of that is true for some Fall Out Boy and Panic at the Disco. The first part is absolutely not. You will be exposed. That has kept me from doing songs that I would love to do for karaoke, like Paramore or Dashboard Confessional. I have a friend named Jeff. Similar to you and Kramer, we had a nice little chemistry with some Taking Back Sunday songs where I would just do the screamier parts.
Mm-hmm.
That's more my wheelhouse. Anyone who listens to Sportsfeld knows my screamo chops.
Yeah, okay.
I would tend to stick to those parts. One time I did a way too deep cut. I did Bury Myself Alive by The Used, and absolutely nobody knew what song I was singing. That was when I realized that you have to, as much as karaoke is about you singing the songs that you want to sing and having fun with it, you should probably pick songs that people will recognize. Otherwise, they'll get really annoyed, especially if you're bad.
Yeah.
Probably my go-to, if I like had to pick one that I would be most comfortable doing, Damn It by Blink-182. It's just like, it's not a complicated song. It's everyone easy to remember the lyrics. Everyone likes it. That'd be my answer. That'd be my go-to. I surprised Mr. Brightside by The Killers didn't come up. It's the most karaoke song of all
time. It's definitely on my list. Yeah.
I figured it might be. All right, question 6. This is related. This one comes from Johnny. What's a song that you don't like, but you can sing every word to?
So many. Specifically, Wonderwall.
Okay. Pretty much any popular radio song from 2000 to 2004 that I didn't want to be hearing, but radio was my primary way of getting music.
Nickelback. I'd tell you all of How You Remind Me now that I think about it.
Yeah, well, he said songs that you don't like.
Yeah, that's true. That is secretly a really sick song.
When Nickelback first came out, I was like, this sucks. And my dad would listen to it a lot. And my parents were going through a divorce. And we were in, I want to say, Sarnia. Or Chatham, whatever has, one of those cities has like a Bayfest every summer where they have concerts, and Nickelback was playing, and my dad was like, will you go with me? And I was like, sure, sure, I'll go see Nickelback with you, dad going through a divorce. And it fucking ruled. They were so good live, and they had so much pyro that like 15-year-old me was like, I made a mistake. Nickelback's cool. And then by the time I was like 15 and one day older than that, I was like, Nickelback sucks. I'm never admitting that I like Nickelback.
That's fair.
But yes, they would certainly qualify. For me, I like lock in lyrics pretty easily.
Yeah, so same.
There are a lot of songs like that.
Any song by The Doors also that is like famous because The Doors are the worst band of all time.
Subjective take there.
Nope. No. Objective.
Jake hates The Doors.
I truly do.
Moving on.
Also, because of my youth, a lot of Red Hot Chili Peppers songs.
Yeah. But I don't know. Those are ones that I'm not.
If you heard Scar Tissue right now, you would know every word.
Probably. But they also have like weird parts of their songs where the lyrics get really weird and I'm not sure. It's like one time I did with some friends, I did Get Down by Backstreet Boys in karaoke, and we all forgot there was a rap verse. I feel like you'd run into that with Red Hot Chili Peppers sometimes, right, where it's like, oh yeah, there's 3 minutes of this song where Anthony Kiedis just scats.
It's true. To that point, I do know every word to Around the World, which is a song I don't like.
Around the World?
Yeah, by the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, I thought you were going Daft Punk.
No, that's a great song.
That's a cheat. There's only one word.
Also a great song.
Or one lyric, yeah. All right, moving on. Question 7. This is the toughest question. It's a very good question.
Great question.
It killed me. My answers are all blank right now because I knew I was going to change them a lot. This comes from Brandon O'Connor. He asks, you start your own band and endeavor to debut with an autobiographical LP. What are the names of A, your band, B, your album, and C, your lead single? My response to this is, dude, I named this podcast Columbia House Party, and my first ever blog was called The On Deck Circle. Please don't let me name things.
Yeah, I'm also bad at naming things, as Blake would know from all of our brainstorming of what to call this podcast. I don't know. I feel like the answer to all three is peaked at 16, probably.
So you are going to release a self-titled album with a title track?
Yeah. Jake Oldsby, colon, peaked at 16.
All right. I think the album title is something along the lines of like In Love at a Coffee Shop. It's just like, it's happened to me because I'm a freelance writer and haven't had an office in 5 years. It's a running joke that I have with Kramer.
Yeah.
That it's just like, oh yeah, I'm the all-time leader in falling in love with someone at a coffee shop.
If we're keeping it thematic, then it's peaked at 16 and the album name is Carrying Infinite Jest on the Subway.
Oh, that's awful.
Hoping someone will talk to me.
In terms of, I guess that would be the lead single, not the album name. In terms of the album name, this was like a joke I made to Steve recently that like he was talking about like new like cover shots or whatever for Pop. And I was like, sure. Oh, you know what you guys should do? You guys should get a photo taken at the exact spot that Kawhi Leonard took the shot and like release like the Lucky Bounces EP.
That's really good.
Yeah. I don't know what the band name would be, but I think I have the album and the lead single.
That's really good. Damn.
Band name stuff. I'm not good at naming.
So here's the thing about band names. There is no such thing as a good band name.
Yeah.
They're all ridiculous and only become unridiculous when the band is good or successful. It's just a fact. Name any band name, and if you think about it, you're like, wow, that's fucking stupid.
Yeah, Blink-182. Hey, Blink was taken, so we just picked the number.
Yeah. Except for Diarrhea Planet. That's the only good band name.
Yes. Rainbow Butt Monkeys. Mookie Blaylock. Why?
Perfect.
Don't name your team that. Or your band that. Don't name your team that either.
Worked well for him.
All right. Sorry our answers aren't better, Brandon. That's a really good question. Really hard question. Actually, if you are on Discord or follow us on Twitter and you want to send us your autobiographical band name, album name, and lead single, we would really appreciate it. I want to hear it. Excellent question, Brandon. Good job. Sorry we're not better at this. Moving on. This one comes from Sean Woodley. What are each of your top three sports video game soundtracks, and what do you think makes a good sports video game soundtrack? I think Sean wants us to answer MVP Baseball
05. He absolutely does. Or NHL 2005, I think.
So MVP Baseball 05 is one of the best games ever with a catchy soundtrack, but that's not the same thing as having the best soundtrack. My answer includes this ridiculous, ridiculous song. What you do? I'm about to take and bet your right bird. Right bird. From the 3-point line, I don't curve. Don't curve. I'm about to take and bet your right bird. Right bird. Cross over, make the whole crowd stir. Crowd stir. I like the way the crowd cheer when I lay it up. Like EA Sports, I'm in the game and play it tough. Days on, about to take it to the hoop. But first, let me come out my warm-up suit. I play the court. Why you fools play the bench? Your coach don't know that play didn't make no sense. Pass it, steal it, it's all teamwork. Cheerleaders on the sideline and they chain shirts. My dribble is wicked as I drive down the lane. To the hoop, I take a check and bake, yeah, it ain't no thing. Once I get in the game, don't worry about a thing. But why I'ma be leaving MVP with the ring? I'm about to shake and bake your right bird. Right bird. From the 3-point line, I don't curve. Don't curve. I'm about to shake and bake your right bird. Right bird. Cross over, make the whole crowd stir. Look, man, Right There by Chingy was one of the biggest songs in the world at the time, and they got him to do an NBA Live 2000 version of that song. Not that song alone would put NBA Live 2004 in the conversation for best sports video game soundtrack. On top of the Chingy Right There NBA remix, DeBrat, Red Cafe, and Freeway also did NBA Live 2004 remixes of their popular songs.
They did.
Twista did an original song just called NBA Live 2004. And then the soundtrack also has early Sean Paul, The Game, Outkast, Clips, Mobb Deep, Lil Flip. That is a really good basketball soundtrack. There's also the line from Chingy, "Yo, coach, don't know that play didn't make no sense." I can't. NBA Live 04 is at the top of this list.
I have three from three different franchises, three different sports. Mine, just to piggyback on yours a little bit, one of mine is NBA Live 2003.
Okay.
Which features...
There's a good debate to be had.
Which features It's in the Game by Fabulous, which is a great
song. Love Fab.
Also, Drop Drop by Joe Budden. And also a song called Ballin' Boys by something called No Good, which has been stuck in my head once a week since 2003. Couldn't tell you the verse. I just know the chorus is them saying "we ballin' boys" over and over again, and it's hilarious. My other answers would be NHL 2003, which features songs like Deny by Default, Sick With You, which is the best song by Gob. Headstrong by Trapped.
Oh, love Trapped. I could not believe when people were tweeting around, because there was the Pitchfork list of like the top 10 or the Billboard list of the top 10 rock songs of 2010 to 2019. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I could not believe Trapped was on the 2000 to 2009.
I thought it was older for sure.
Also, I didn't realize that that song was that popular. I thought it was just like this niche little wrestling and sports video game. Like, yeah. I had no idea that that was one of the biggest songs in the world.
Angel 2003 also has Sweetness by Jimmy Eat World. Of course it does. Two default songs, two Gob songs. No One Knows by Queens of the Stone Age.
Two default songs.
100 Million by Treble Charger.
That's a really good answer, NHL 2003.
And then Madden 2004, which has a song called Action by Blink-182, which is just Feeling This when it was called Action. It's the first version of it. Leaving Song Part 2 by AFI. Church by Outkast, which is somehow, for some reason, credited as Outkast featuring Big Boy. Alien Ant Farm, The Roots, Joe Budden, Killer Mikes, Bubba Sparks, Jet, Are You Gonna Be My Girl, Thrice, Yellow Card, Gob Again, Avenged Sevenfold.
These mid-2000s sports video games. Yeah, and there's also Madden 05, I want to say, is the one with Dance Dance.
And American Idiot, I think, debuted in Madden 2005.
Unbelievable.
It's kind of funny that Madden had back-to-back soundtracks of, like, Blink and Green Day debuting tracks.
Where the line is for a sports video game soundtrack, I'm unsure.
Yeah.
The Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 soundtrack.
Obviously.
I can't believe I got to play the Chingy 2000 NBA Live 2004 remix made the whole on show this worth podcast. It. Absolutely. We're done now.
Yeah.
This is it. All right. This question comes from Adam. If you could get rid of any one song forever, it will never have existed, what would it be and why? That's what I said now, princess, princess who adore you. Just go ahead now, when there's diamonds in his pockets, and that's a threat now. This one said he wants to buy you rockets, ain't in his head now. How dare you?
That was obviously Two Princes.
By Spin Doctors.
How
dare you?
I genuinely don't know how that became my least favorite song, but it did. And it, other than, again, as I already said, every Doors song that exists.
Like, if we get rid of Two Princes, are we also getting rid of Semi-Charmed Life, which ripped the start of that off?
No, because then Semi-Charmed Life is held up as an original thought.
Are we getting rid of So I Married an Axe Murderer, which has that
it's
song
on as the soundtrack?
It's a very important
part
of the...
You can plug and play any song come on. From 1987 on there or whatever it
1991.
Is. Whatever. I don't know how...
How dare you?
I don't know how I came to hate that song so much, but I just... It makes me like audibly grinding my teeth as that was playing. I fucking hate that song. I don't have any reason. That's the thing. It's one of those I don't even like... Don't even know enough about the band to like dislike it. I just hate
one of my favorite Spin Doctors thing is, do you watch Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Of course.
So when Charlie does the like Serpico episode, yep, and like so Dennis and Frank have bought the cop car from the junk lot and like, yeah, they're treating Charlie like a criminal and he thinks he's an undercover cop. He like tries to secretly record them and he records them on a tape that says Spin Doctors Mix. It's like just the idea of like music doesn't really come up in this show except other than like Charlie is a musical savant.
Yeah.
And that's the music he listens to.
And those sweet Steve Winwood tracks on the boat.
Yeah.
Yes. You got to listen to Steve Winwood.
Yeah. So Charlie being a musical savant who
listens to Spin Doctors,
whose Spin Doctors are his inspiration.
It's fair.
Is very funny to me. I don't have a lot of answers here. You know, because of my job, sometimes the songs that get played a lot in arena kind of get, yeah, on my nerves. But like, I don't need to kick any of them out of there. I think if I had to answer, I would answer I'm Just a Kid by Simple Plan. Simple Plan was like what my friends thought I was listening to when, yeah, they would make fun of my music. And it's just like, if they didn't exist, you know, it would be, it would have been easier. I also, this isn't a song and it's kind of a cheat, but like, I hate in retrospect that Cobra Starship existed.
Mm.
One, because we've talked a lot about how there's no such thing as guilty pleasures. I think that's that one. The fact that I like that still qualifies, but also because the lead singer was way better in Midtown and I really liked Midtown and I lost Midtown for Cobra Starship. And then like weirdly liked it.
I don't hold this opinion as much anymore because I feel way less strongly about this band than I once did, but I felt the same about the Mars Volta.
Ah.
I was always really bummed that they did that instead of More at the Drive, even though I know they all like hated each other at that point.
Yeah. Mars Volta's all right though.
That first album, I like the first album a lot. The rest I can do without, but I'm not a prog guy.
All right. Well, Spin Doctors are out of here, I guess.
Yeah.
Sorry, Charlie Kelly. Moving on, we got another question from Mike. When making your top, I also can't tell if this is making fun of something I said on my all decade list or it's an actual question, but he put it in the mailbag part of Discord.
We're going to answer it anyway.
When making your top albums of the decade list, were you aware of recency bias? Which, yes, I was.
Yes and no. I was, but I also didn't find anything really in 2019, including the two that were at the bottom of my decade list to be... They didn't make enough of an impression on me to worry about it, I would say. I think I could see there being like albums I missed perhaps in 2019 that like I could put on there. But it wasn't a year that I was like, this has to go on my all decade. I actually felt almost the opposite in that I felt sort of obligation to put my top two from 2019 on the list because of just like, how can you call it your favorite of the year, but not your favorite of the last nine kind of thing? Like I know you absolutely can, or last 10, because it's a decade. But yeah, I felt more the opposite than the... And I think that was just a function of the year itself for me.
Yeah, I tried to be aware of it. So like, I didn't have anything from 2019 too high. And like, I think when I look back in a couple of years, like Morbid Stuff would probably be a little higher. And I was... I mean, I ran into the like objectivity with that, but also the recency bias. Even like Phoebe, I had her at number two, and like I think probably it's gonna be, I'm gonna look back and be like, that was your number one, and it's just like, I was like, well, it was late 2017, and so I was aware of it, and I think more, I don't think it actually changed much of my ranking, it just made it stressful for me.
Yeah, for some reason my brain didn't, in like the terms of, you know, recency bias, if it wasn't 2019, that didn't factor at all for me. Like, good. I'd Foxing at three, it's 2018.
Yeah, it's hard to tell how things will hold up. And it's a challenge to do those lists and year-end lists as a like live in the moment kind of thing and not, you know, I'm like, well, how will this look like for posterity? Like, how's it going to hold up? But that's not the exercise. And it's like, I try, yeah, very hard to be true to whatever my feelings are in that moment. But yes, it was at least something that danced around my head a lot. We have another question from James. Have you ever gotten into or explored bands simply because they're from a certain city? For example, Los Campesinos lead you to check out bands from Cardiff.
Oh, yeah. Definitely, especially when I was younger. Alkaline Trio led me to a ton of Chicago bands. I remember like just realizing that, like, oh, all these bands I like happen to all be from Chicago. I think it's natural. I think especially for bands that mention stuff in references, like I think like you.
Oh, the Men Singers, and you're like, oh my God, okay, I'll go to Philadelphia.
I'll go to a diner and see if there's a waitress there.
Yes, Men Singers and the Wonder Years being among my favorite bands. It's like, yes, I'm aware of Philadelphia. I got it.
I think that like, depending on what it is. Like, I remember there, obviously there was like the, you know, the Montreal boom and alt rock in the mid 2000s with Arcade Fire. And,
your influence on the city.
Of course. Yeah. But like, I think that as a lyric heavy guy, and there's band like Alkaline Trio reference Chicago all the time. Mm-hmm. That is what causes me to go and check it out. And also I think it happens naturally. Cause like you get into Alkaline Trio and it's like, oh, what were the bands that these guys were in before? And then obviously they're all from Chicago.
Yes.
So it's
or Fall Out Boy. And you're like, oh yeah, let's check out their like hardcore bands.
Yeah, exactly.
For me, this has happened way more in the hip hop I listen to because geographically different areas tend to have different sounds. So if you hear something, you know, if you hear a Chicago artist that you like, it's like, okay, well, Chicago has that drill sound going on right now. So you might want to check out other artists from that area who are probably going to have a similar kind of sound. Or, you know, at the peak of like, you know, the Houston rap scene, or Atlanta had the crunk rap movement for a little while. So it's tended to take place more in hip hop for me. However, because of, you know, one, I want to give, I'm always going to be more eager to check out like Canadian bands. It's just kind of the way I'm wired. But also it'll lead me sometimes, like if I see a band from a small, like just like obviously Toronto bands are one thing, but if you see, like if there were a band from Cambridge, I would jump all over it. The other year I found a band from an emo band from Newfoundland, from St. John's, Newfoundland, just like randomly on Bandcamp, and I checked them out. This is a song by a band called Swimming. Terrible SEO name when you're trying to find this band after the fact and you're not 100% sure what the name was. This is a song by them you can find on their Bandcamp called Nothing to No One. Heard of Mom Jeans? That's Ma, your jeans by.
Oof.
Sorry, man.
No, I think your regional.
They're really good, by the way. They only have a couple songs out, but
that sounds great.
Check them out. I'm excited for their first, even an EP. I think their longest is a 4-track demo. So they're called Swimming. They're from Newfoundland.
I think your regional idea is kind of on the head. Like, you think to emo, there's like the whole Midwest emo scene that like aren't necessarily from the same city, but that was right. Or like the Omaha Saddle Creek scene back, you know, as what we talked about,
pop punk being New Jersey and Long Island.
Heavy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. New Jersey's a big one, obviously. There's so many fucking bands from New Jersey.
That's a good question. All right, this one's from Adam. He asks, how did you find new music in the late 90s, early 2000s? Through real life channels or internet channels or some combination?
Internet forums was a big one for me. I would go to a band's website that a band I liked, and if they had a forum, I would just kind of browse it and see what people were talking about. I was impacted heavily by just what artists I like were talking about, like, or covered. Like, Ted Leo turned me on to hundreds of bands just by random shit he covers on live bootlegs that I listened to. Like, so I got into Against Me because I saw him wearing an Against Me t-shirt in a picture. Like,
perfect.
That kind of stuff. I also was a big CD buyer. I had a job from when I was a child, so I had a decent amount of disposable income for a young person. So every week I would just go and buy CDs.
And you could pop them in the HMV thing and listen to them first. To see
exactly.
If you like
yeah.
It. Binning. It was binning before.
Yeah.
Or I guess after binning, but also before binning.
Totally. I found a ton of music just by like bands on the same label or bands that toured together. I also used to be really big at going to see like every opener, which right. turned me onto a ton of bands, which I don't really do anymore. I probably should. But.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I found out about Great Grandpa.
Right.
Open for Sorority Noise and Citizen. For me, so I'm 2 years older than you and my family was pretty late to get the internet. So for me, up until maybe grade eight, it was a lot of listening to the radio. So when, and I'm from Cambridge, so you only sometimes got the London station, which was 95.9 and their alt rock station, and you only sometimes got 102.1 The Edge, and nothing in like Cambridge, Kitchener, Waterloo was anything other than like easy listening or like...
very Chum FM stuff.
Yeah, or like classic rock. Those are the only options that you had. So for me, the radio, I would try, and then through friends, and then... Columbia House, honestly, was one of them I would look. And basically, if it seemed related to something else I liked or it had the little E explicit on it, I was like, yeah, I'll check it out. Take that, mom. Once the internet came, obviously, like Napster and LimeWire. So one of the things you could do, I don't know if it was on all of those platforms, but at least one of them, you could, if you were downloading a song from someone, you could check out other songs that they had.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, if I searched for this, you know, maybe this other person has something that I could check out. There was also... This is not how I found good music that I like now, but when in the early 2000s, I kind of had my like metal and new metal years. I've mentioned I liked a lot of Disturbed and Slipknot and Trapped and Trust Company. And how I found some of those bands was I was also like heavily active on like wrestling forums and stuff. And because that type of music tends to overlap a lot with younger wrestling fans, I would get put onto stuff that way. And then, of course, there was just, you know, my favorite wrestler, Chris Jericho, also becoming a rock star in a band called Fozzy.
You are beautiful on the inside. You are innocence personified. And I will drag you down and sell you out. Run away. I am cold like December snow. I have carved out this soul made of stone. And I will drag you down and sell.
So that is that's a song called Judas. It's his entrance music right now. He does his own entrance music. At the time in like the early 2000s, it was kind of like a weird, you couldn't tell if it was a joke or not. Like
right.
It was obviously Chris Jericho, but it was like Chris Jericho turned up to like a wrestler who's already turned up to 11 somehow turned up to like 12. And he was like really into like the Spinal Tap references. He would also like he had an alias that he would sing as and would refuse to acknowledge that he was Chris Jericho. Like he went on Much Music.
Like a Chris Gaines, Garth Brooks kind of thing.
Yeah.
But a wrestler.
Yeah. So he went on Much Music and was like his music character is basically his wrestling character, but he refuses to acknowledge. they had a cover of Eat the Rich on their first album. So anyway, that was Judas by Fozzy, fronted by Chris Jericho. I have been working in references to that song as much as possible. Like I was on 590 this week and I got to do the playlist for the 2 days. Like I did a 3-hour show Monday and Tuesday and I got to do the playlist. And yeah, I worked Judas by Fozzy in there.
It's fair. To your point on finding stuff on file sharing, I don't know if it's still around, but the program SoulSeek, people used it, was like the whole point of it was you could browse someone's entire music library after download. It was like the first place you could find full albums reliably, illegally.
Nice.
And you would just like right click and be like, what else do you have? And that was a big one for me as well.
All right. Good question. Guys, this has been our second mailbag episode. If you're listening, you're a Patreon supporter, which means you're the best. Jake Webster. I like you. I'm
Blake's not willing to commit. To
no, I actually do like you, but you can't really tell because I just put out friend vibes. So you're
Blake's
not,
looking
you're
at
not
you,
really
Blake's
sure.
Blake's looking at you in a coffee shop.
Yes. I'll never say anything to you. I've never disrupt your personal space. but I love you from very far away. All right, Jake. That's pretty much it. We both got to go to work.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Our real jobs. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening.
Try the fish.